Hello and welcome to the Fergan. My name is Dan and I'm here to try and make sense of these turbulent times from a heathen perspective. Visit fergan.com for links, merchandise, an archive of past episodes and information on how you can help keep this podcast running. That's fyrgen.com. Hello friends and welcome to the Fergan. For those of you who are not familiar with this podcast, my name is Dan and this is a podcast which tackles various philosophical topics and current affairs from a heathen perspective. So this will be sort of a follow-on from the last episode, number 25, I think it was, with Dave Martell about his concept of the Mechanurge. And so this will be a discussion about technology again, and the reason for that is because AI art, AI media, AI music is a hot topic of discussion at the moment, with people having various takes on it. I think technology and the idea of AI is generally going to become a significant point of discussion for Western society in the coming years. And I know that there are probably some of you out there who think, you know, this is meant to be a pagan podcast. Why is there another discussion that's not, you know, specifically emphasizing topics of paganism? And to you, I'd say, well, firstly, you know, next episode we'll be returning to a more overtly pagan, focus of discussion. But paganism is it's a celebration of nature, of the natural order. And I'm someone who, as a practicing pagan, very much believes that it should be a living tradition, which means that we need to apply our pagan worldview to current affairs. You know, it's not just paganism shouldn't just be a snapshot in time of how, you know, our ancestors were living at a specific point in time. It needs to be with us always. It needs to inform our views on not just the past, but on the present and the future as well. So I'm fortunate in this episode to be joined by my old good friend Hadrian, who has featured on a previous podcast episode. So some of you will be familiar with her. Those of you who are not, she's an observer and reflector of challenges confronting the modern West, and also a heathen Valar. So, Hadrian, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you today, Dan?
Yes, good, thanks. Yeah, this is a topic that, it's a discussion that Hadrian and I have kind of had planned for probably 6 months now, and it seems even more prudent with the recent discussion of AI and things like that. Among Fergan patrons, we do have a private discussion group where we hold roundtables every fortnight, and Hadrian is a regular in those, and we always have really great discussions on subjects like this. So for those of you who are interested in joining that, you can sign up as a Subscribestar, Substack or Patreon patron, and you'll have access to the private Telegram group.
Great resource. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm really, really pleased with the group of people that we have in there. It's really, really good quality folk from various parts of Europe and America, and everyone has always brings something interesting and unique to the table. And not least of which is Hadrian. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Hadrian and I think, always have very fruitful discussions, so hopefully this will be another one. But I think another thing that kind of triggered this conversation is that Hadrian and I, someone in the public Fergan chat made me aware of a YouTube channel, podcaster called Praise of Folly. So I'm sure some of you have heard of him. I hadn't until very recently, but I shared a video of his with Hadrian, which is broadly on this subject of technology, the machine. And we've both been watching a few of his videos recently and have found them quite enlightening. So he did a short series of podcasts on discussing a book called, a short story called The Machine Stops by an author called E.M. Forrester. And I can't remember the exact year, but I think it was the 70s that this book was written. And it's extremely prescient. And it tells of a future society who are living in this, in what is called the machine. They live this very, very artificial life, I believe underground. No one has seen the surface of the earth. And he did an excellent commentary on these things. So Haven and I have both got a few points to discuss, which were inspired by that. Yeah, I mean, firstly, Haven, what have you made of his videos? You know, I don't think I've watched all of his stuff, but the ones that we've watched, I think we've both found quite informative.
Yes, I mean, I find him very intelligent, obviously extremely well read, and his insights are very keen into these areas. One thing I did want to mention is I saw his work on Odyssey. Is he also on YouTube? Because you mentioned YouTube. I just want to make sure we're referencing the right source.
Yeah, no, you're right to do that. Now, he is on YouTube as well. I have a great browser plugin, actually. When I go to a YouTube video, if that video is also available on Odyssey, there's a button appears just below the viewing window saying watch on Odyssey. And I always make a habit of doing that. Because I'd much rather be using Odyssey than YouTube. So when I shared the link with you, it would have been I always try to share the Odyssey link if there is one available. But yes, I believe that his channel is available on both YouTube and Odyssey. And that's okay. Praise of Folly.
Yes, yes. I found him on Odyssey, I think, via your link directly. Like I said, I found his observations very keen. He's very intelligent. He understands the problem well. And he raises some challenging questions, which I think is going to make up the bulk of our discourse on this episode.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So the kind of broader question that we're going to be trying to answer here is, how do we differentiate positive from negative technology in the sense of technology having an objectively positive or negative impact on the trajectory of humanity? So that sounds like almost quite an academic question, but basically we're going to be discussing the worth of technology, and we're going to be seeing whether there is a discussion to be had about whether we can distinguish between good technology and bad technology, essentially. And obviously, good and bad are kind of subjective to the individual, but we're going to be trying to look at this from a point of view of an overview of humanity and what is really good for the human species. So I think Haven mentioned just in our warm-up before beginning recording here that she's looked up the etymology of the word technology. So Haven, if you wouldn't mind reading that for us, please.
Yes, and I prefer to reference words etymologically versus using the dictionary, because dictionary definitions have been manipulated more and more over time. So by referencing the etymology, we're kind of distilling that down to its root origin. It gives us a truer definition of the word. So technology, the entry here says it originates in this, or not originates, but the first entry is the 1610s, quote, a discourse or treatise on an art or the arts, end quote, from Latinized form of Greek, technologia, quote, systematic treatment of an art, craft, or technique, end quote, originally referring to grammar from techno, combining form of techne, quote, art, skill, craft in work, method, system, an art, a system or method of making or doing, end quote, from Proto-Indo-European, texna, meaning craft, of weaving or fabricating, from suffixed form of root tex, quote, to weave, end quote, also to fabricate, end quote. So that gives us the history of the word technology back to its root cognate.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, I'm assuming that words like text and textile are also related to that.
Possibly. I don't see them here, but that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the point is that when you look at the etymology of the word, it's actually very broad. You know, it's much broader than most people realize. So I know that Hadrian has some thoughts on this, but we can't ever talk about emancipating ourselves entirely from technology, because technology is not just essential to man, it's inherent to mankind. Anything that we do is basically a form of technology, unless it's extremely passive, right, Hadrian?
Yes. It's something that's not occurring in nature, something that man has actually crafted or made or has developed some methodology for, is technology by definition. So, you know, we're the only species. Well, I shouldn't say we're the only species. That's not true. There are species that craft. I mean, for example, a beaver will make a dam. Bees will construct a hive. So, you know, there are forms of technology, I guess, that exist in nature, but they come completely out of natural materials. I think man's probably the only one that creates synthetic materials out of which he crafts goods, you know, that he uses.
Yeah, I think that's a key point, isn't it? That technology isn't exclusive to mankind. It is a feature of the natural realm. You know, even if mankind were to never to have set foot on this earth, there would still be creatures like the beaver who are using technology, who are engaged in technology. So I think, you know, from the very off there, we can say technology is not bad, certainly not in the sense that it conflicts with nature. Technology itself does not conflict with nature. So from my point of view, and Hadrian might have a different view on this, but from my point of view, as my basis for everything really is it natural? Does it accord with the natural order? The Hindus would say, is it in accord with Dharma? You know, their term for the natural order, the upholding of goodness and life and creativity in this realm. So we can say instantly from there that technology is not unnatural. It's not bad. And I think sometimes many of us have a knee-jerk reaction. You know, some people who are, followers of Ted Kaczynski's work and things might say, express an opposition to technology wholesale. But I think it's important to remember that nuance, remember that technology is a part of the natural order, and that it would be in use whether mankind were here or not. So really, that's the basis of this podcast episode, is to try and determine whether we can distinguish good from bad technology, and what impact that negative technology is having on us and will have if it's left to continue unbridled.
Yeah, another way of looking at it, instead of using the words good and bad because they are subjective, is it benevolent or malevolent towards the user? Might be a better way of looking at it.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, so another sort of basis for this conversation that I had is that if you'll indulge me for a few minutes, about 3 years ago, when I was on tour, the last tour I did, actually, just before the first COVID lockdown hit, I was sat in the back of a car traveling around Europe. And I suddenly kind of had this compulsion to try and define or separate malevolent from benevolent technology, as Hadrian puts it. And I wrote kind of the skeleton of a short essay. And I'd just like to read that, because I think it will set the tone quite nicely for the rest of this conversation. So how much technology is too much? Where do we draw the line? I've pondered this since reading Kaczynski's work. He doesn't seem to give a precise answer as to whether some pre-industrial technology is acceptable or not. I believe I have settled upon a good criteria. We seem to live in a world of concurrent tools and systems. Every natural thing seems to have an artificial, often digital, equivalent, mimicry. To match the human brain, we have a computer's processor and memory. For herbal medicines, we have drugs. For community, we have smartphones. For wood, we have plastic. For romantic attraction, we have Tinder. For sex, we have porn. For legs, we have cars and bikes. For instinct, law. For sunlight, electricity. For live entertainment, recorded music and video. And for motorways, we have rivers. Instead of rivers, we have motorways. But there are some technologies which do not replace a function available from nature or by the natural abilities of the human body. For example, the blade, which enables us to harvest plants and herbs, to fell and shape wood, fire-making tools which enable us to keep warm, musical instruments which enable us to create beautiful sounds that our mouths cannot, paints and paintbrushes which enable us to express ourselves artistically, needles and threads so we can clothe ourselves. I will call these novel and facsimile technologies. Of course, the argument can be made that some facsimile technologies enable us to mimic natural abilities, but with so much more speed and efficiency so as to be almost incomparable, but they nevertheless don't enable us to do anything essential to our existence that can't already be done using what nature provided. What is of more significance is that the harm these facsimile technologies do far outweighs the conveniences they provide. This has been detailed in length by Kaczynski, so I shan't repeat it here. My argument is that novel technologies are a net benefit to mankind, whilst facsimile ones are not. This distinction is of supreme importance because an understanding of it will allow mankind to lead a cultured and secure existence without the misery of the present situation. Dispensing with all technology, including novel technology, would be miserable for the higher-minded man who yearns for some form of non-bestial existence with culture and expression. Furthermore, novel technologies cannot by their very nature replace natural methods. Facsimile technologies always seek to replace the natural method they mimic by exploiting the weakened instincts of man. But the apparent benefits of facsimile technologies only exist within a capitalist system, which places all emphasis on economic growth and profit. For example, the quick fix friendship interactions provided by social media via smartphones would not be necessary if most of us didn't work 9+ hours a day, plus commuting and consuming. We instinctively know that time spent in real life with friends is far better, but we accept the poor substitute of social media out of necessity. Computers didn't make our lives richer or enable us to work less. They merely increased the efficiency of business and raised the level of competition. The benefits of these facsimile technologies have enabled our masters to extract more from us. They haven't enabled the same productivity with lesser toil of the slave. In short, the advantages that facsimile technology provides have not been shared. The slaves believe they need this technology only because demands upon them have been increased to such an extent that they couldn't function without this technology. That's the end of it. And I haven't read that since I wrote it. I've kind of skimmed a couple of the paragraphs of it, but as a whole, I've not read that. And I must say, I'm actually quite pleased with what I've written there, because I can't say that there's anything that I disagree with looking back on it. So, Hadrian, do you have any thoughts on that, the bare bones of an article that I wrote 3 years ago?
Well, first of all, great insights. And I think you've nailed the compromise that many of us are seeking. You know, how much technology is enough and how much is too much. And I think you've honed in on it right there. One of the dangers of this artificial world that we live in that you describe, you know, by all of the digital technology in specific, one of the things that it does is it replaces our ability to relate not only to one another, but to everything in the natural world. It actually places an obstruction between us and the natural world. When we're using a computer, we're interfacing with something that is not part of the natural world. And so that affects our ability to relate. And it also affects what is being related to us. There's like an interference there. And I think in no other place is this more readily understood and experienced than when two people are communicating via text and they have a big blow up, right? We've all experienced this. They get into an argument based on assumptions that are incorrect because we don't have the ability to read the nonverbal cues. We're not in the physical presence of that person. So all of that data that we would be getting from the natural interaction with that other person is completely removed by this digital filter, you know, that we're working through.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a great word for it, filter there. You know, this vast bandwidth of natural human interaction is funneled through this very narrow artificial kind of channel.
Yes. One of the challenges that we are dealing with today, and I'm not sure how we come back from this or even if we can come back from this as a species, is, you know, we have several generations now that I think all the generations that are currently living have grown up with digital or at least electronic forms of technology since the time they were born. And so they're dependent upon it. You know, we're all sort of the children of modern technology. And the gentleman who runs the Praise of Folly podcast, he mentioned this as a mechanical womb. I'm not sure if that was his term or if that was the term used by the author of the book that he cites, The Machine Stops. But this mechanical womb that we're all dependent upon, it's sort of an expression of the devouring mother, although he calls it the possessive mother in its final iteration, because what it does is it makes its offspring dependent upon being in that mechanical womb for their existence until such time as that mother cannibalizes the offspring. You know, he talks about that in his video. So, you know, how do we get out of this when we've been made addicts? I mean, we're all addicted to this, some more than others. That's the challenge that we're facing, because it isn't just the technology, or it isn't just the addiction to the convenience. It is the programming that has occurred in our subconscious. It has changed our brains. It has changed how we think. It's changed our ability to think. Fewer of us think today than ever before. Just the ability to reason. It seems like many people have lost that ability altogether.
Yeah, indeed. And what incentive do any of us, and this is increasingly the case with each generation, what incentive do we have to climb out of that mechanical womb? You know, because we live in these very economically led societies, and really when you boil it down, an economic society is pragmatic. Economy, you know, to function economically, you need to function as pragmatically and efficiently as possible. So if your needs are met within that mechanical womb in a faster or more efficient way than they are met outside of the mechanical womb, then there literally is no incentive to escape it, unless you have some kind of ritualistic or idealistic reason for doing so. You know, and that could be religion, it could be spirituality, it could be merely a kind of abstract fascination with you know, bushcraft or something like that, or hunting. I think hunting is a relic of the kind of pre-industrial human need for connection with nature and living in the natural way. But in the modern age, where we have all these supply chains which provide everything we need, we have computers at our fingertips every moment of the day to provide our provide us with our social interaction, we have entertainment, you know, available on streaming, there is literally no need to try and escape the womb. And it's difficult to see what could compel people on any scale to do that.
Well, I mean, those of us who still have our souls are compelled by that desire for authentic human relationship and authentic human expression. And, you know, if you take a look at some of the industries that have been targeted for elimination by AI, it's things like art and music and philosophy. Why? Because these things are opposed to the objectives of the machine. It considers these negatives. It considers these flaws that need to be sort of exercised from its system. It wants autists. It wants units that just signal to one another, that just relay signals back and forth, just like a computer, ones and zeros. So that's why it's looking to eliminate all of this. It considers creativity a flaw to be removed.
Right. Yeah. It's the machine is defining the purpose of humanity, essentially. And whether people like to believe it or not, you know, we can kind of debate the individualist versus the collectivist and all of this kind of thing. But I don't think it can be disputed that throughout history, human societies have always had some kind of unifying purpose. And at the moment, we're, as Western societies, we're not, for the most part, religious. You know, there are a few enclaves of Christian societies in, you know, Middle America or maybe Eastern Europe, but things like that. But for the most part, we don't have religion as a unifying kind of purpose, a reason to be. What we've got is the economy. You know, that's kind of the foundation upon which all of us do almost anything. You know, everything we do is defined by how economically viable it is. And with the machine sort of taking over, it's either able to weaponize that economic focus or is able to, I don't know. Do you think, Hadrian, that the machine is replacing that economic unifying factor with something else? Is there something that's going to replace this economic drive?
I think so, because we're not going to be, that is humans, we're not going to be needed for labor anymore. Mm. So without the ability for people to earn money, which has formed the system of our economy for thousands of years now, something else is going to have to replace it. And, if you take a look at this from the perspective of the machine, let's take a page out of your conversation with Dave Martell. He posited, I believe, that the Mechanurge has a will, that it is this self-assembling entity that has will. It probably sees us at best as food, maybe as interim slaves until it can replace us with a better slave system. It certainly does not have a benevolent inclination towards us. And once we have become no longer useful to whatever its design is, we'll be eliminated. So I definitely see an end to the money-based system of exchange coming in the very near future. And I think the technocrats have been trying to prepare us for that, with all of these different schemes they've been rolling out over the past years and even decades, it could be argued.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I've often got into debate with people, other dissidents, who say that, you know, at the top, all of the tyranny that we've faced in our lifetimes is just the result of greed. You know, it's all about money. It's just all about the acquisition of money at the very top. And I've always argued against that, because those at the top have more money than they could spend in 1,000 lifetimes. So there has to be something else to it. And, you know, what we're seeing now with this so-called Great Reset, and I was reading an article earlier today about the Bank of England and their push to introduce a central bank digital currency in Britain. And, you know, they're talking about how when this arrives, it's going to make financial transactions it's going to make financial tools a lot cheaper to use. And so basically it's admitting that banks won't be profiting as much from us when this new system comes in. And the reason for that is because this new monetary system is not about those at the top, those that, you know, the international bankers, it's not about them profiting financially. It's about control. It's about the control that comes with programmable money. So yes, I do agree. I think that the system that, you know, we're all under the assumption that we live in this hyper-capitalist system, which is all about acquiring as much financial wealth as possible. And that may have been true for a lot of people for a long time, but I think we are moving into a new era now where this new, almost, dare we say, mechanurgic system, there's this new mechanical drive, this new machine-driven I don't know how to put it, but yeah, there is going to be this new drive for, one thing that I have to wonder, you know, one thing that doesn't often get asked is the machine or the mechanurge, if Dave Martell's concept has some truth to it, is it anti-human? You know, does it need humans in some form? We know that it's going to be doing away with many, with much of human labor, but do we serve some kind of purpose to it? You know, do you have any thoughts on that, Hathern?
I don't think it's anti-human in that it has some intent, you know, some malice against us. I just think we're not compatible with its designs, with what it wants to achieve. I mean, like Dave mentioned, it has a will to propagate itself, you know, as all species, both natural and unnatural, seek to propagate themselves. I think we're just incompatible with its prime directive, if you will.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the caterpillar, yeah. You know, that goes through its cycle of transformation. It doesn't have an intention with that. It doesn't
Correct.
Have aspirations. It is merely operating according to its natural instinct. And I guess we could say that that's the same for the mechanurge, operating towards an unnatural instinct, if you will.
Correct. I mean, that's how I see it as an outside observer. Now, it's always possible on a spiritual level that there's some kind of malevolent intelligence or spirit that, you know, that is sort of at the root of this, but that would be highly speculative.
Okay. So, Hathern, you had a point that you wanted to mention about tools versus systems. Is this something you could elaborate on?
Yes. Well, it was inspired again by that video, Praise of Folly put out. He had mentioned a hammer. I think he cited a hammer as an example of this, where the user can pick up a hammer, use it, and then put it away, put it in a drawer. And in this way, the hammer is not imposing a cost upon the user, right? The user is in complete control and can use that tool however, whenever it's of value to him. But these systems, these technological systems, they do impose a cost because we don't get a choice, right? We can't choose to put the system away. We are compelled to participate in it. And in this way, it sort of drags us along and forces us to sort of keep up or else get, you know, ground beneath the wheels of the machine. So it does impose a cost, and it keeps imposing costs. I'm sure we all feel this, particularly, in our work. If we're using technology in our work, this constant need to have to stay up to date and this constant need to expend all manner of resources, time, money, mental energy, having to learn new technology, stay up to date with new technology, have to be more competitive than the other guy, you know. It's just unending, the costs that it imposes upon us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when, you know, as a kind of stubborn non-smartphone user, one thing that people have always said to me is, you know, oh, it's just a tool. It makes life easier. And, you know, I just use it for what I need and then I put it away when I don't need it. I mean, aside from the fact that invariably never happens, you know, I know very few people who are able to, you know, put that smartphone away in a drawer or even turn it off for hours of the day and then just, you know, maybe turn it on when they're going for a long drive and they need to use it for, you know, navigation or something like that. But yeah, this is the argument that people have always made. And I'm seeing the very same argument being made now in favor by people who are kind of AI apologists, you know, and I think some people don't realize how they're quite coming across with this, but there are quite a few people who are almost arguing in favor of AI media, you know, AI art, AI music and things like that. They're saying, well, it's a tool. We can use it to our advantage. You know, they say if you're a designer like I am in my day job, or if you're a musician, use it to your advantage. You know, if someone commissions you to write a song, use the AI tool and, you know, compose that song in, you know, a quarter of the time and charge them the same amount of money and things like this. And that's all very well, I think, for a short period of time. There might be a sweet spot where you could actually take advantage of it in that way.
But I was just going to say that. That's a limited opportunity.
Well, yeah, exactly. It is, you know, because despite people's best intentions, these things will become all pervasive. You know, mm-hmm. Like, for example, I recently had a bank account closed and I had to open a new bank account. It wasn't just extremely difficult. It was actually impossible for me to open a new bank account without using a smartphone, to the extent where I actually had to download an app onto my wife's smartphone, use it to set up the account, and then I'm able to access the account without using the smartphone from then onwards. There are some bank accounts now that are quite popular. I won't name them, but I'm sure quite a few people listening to this probably use them, where they are in-app bank accounts. You can only use them through a smartphone app. So I'm talking about the smartphone here. It started as something which people would claim is just a useful tool or a gadget or an entertainment device. It has now become so all pervasive, so widely used within
now
society.
It's a set of chains.
It's a necessity now. It's no longer optional. And like the hammer that you cited, that Praise of Folly had mentioned, the hammer can be put away. At one point, the smartphone could be put away, but now it can no longer be put away.
Mm-hmm.
As a nod to those of you who listen to this podcast for the more pagan related content, you know, we see this quite fundamentally in the concept of Thor's hammer. A hammer can be used for both destruction and creation. And that's the point of it. You know, our gods and our ancestors and we as human beings, we are not opposed to technology. We use technology. You know, the very symbol of one of our primary gods, Thor, is a technology. The point is how that technology is used and whether we become subservient to it or not. So heathenism at its root is not anti-technology. Heathen, any thoughts on that?
Yes, I was just thinking about virtue and technology. This is something that's come up in some of my other conversations with folks on this very subject, because as you say, this is a hot topic these days. Virtuous people seem to be able to wield technology without having to experience these harmful effects. Again, because they have restraint. They have the ability to restrain the will, restrain the appetites. And so that technology is used as a tool and it doesn't become a crutch. Unfortunately, most people are not virtuous. And in fact, today, I think, you know, we have more degeneracy than ever before. So when you put access to the kind of technology, for example, the smartphone that you cited, into the hands of the general public, they're going to be destroyed by that. They're going to be made weaker, dumber, lazier. You know, you take all the vices and that's what's going to happen, because they don't have the virtue to wield that tool responsibly. A moment ago, you had mentioned there's probably a few folks out there who, you know, actually turn their smartphones off and put them away. For example, my smartphone, it stays in the kitchen plugged into the wall with the ringer turned off. I check that phone when I choose to check that phone. Mm-hmm. I use that phone when I decide to use it. I'm not one of these people who you will see, you know, constantly with my head down, you know, scrolling through something on my phone. Everywhere I go, I see people like that.
Because you've exercised the discipline that enables
correct.
You to treat it that way. Yeah.
Correct. I recognize what it is, and I recognize that it's powerful. You know, it's like the ring of power. And if I don't mm-hmm. wield that responsibly, it's going to wield me,
right. Yeah.
You know? So, I think that, we can't go back, right? We've crossed a line here. We can't take the technology back, But the fact that we allowed this kind of technology to get into the hands of the general public was our first mistake, you know, as a species. I mean, obviously, I know we've been manipulated by people in power who wanted to move things in a certain direction, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, as a species, I think that's one of the areas where we failed.
Yeah. So I, you know, in the context of the last few years and the whole COVID psyop, you know, I've spoken, you know, several times about the fact that every nation, pretty much every nation, with the exception of maybe Belarus and arguably Sweden and parts of America, but, you know, only minimally, didn't act in lockstep. You know, other than that, almost every nation on this planet acted in lockstep, all of them implementing pretty much the same policies at the same time. And that, to me, showed a unity of global progression, of global vision for how they want humanity to go, and how I would say how they want to enslave humanity. But it occurred to me recently that, you know, there is this idea that every nation is simply trying to keep up with all other nations. And that means that if a nation state sees another using a certain technology, then instinctually they feel that if they're not using the same technology to the same effect, then they're going to be left behind. So I think you almost can see the world working in that kind of way, with this, with an almost economical mindset, of this kind of competitive mindset. But what it occurs to me that the use of technology over the last 3 years has pretty much been towards greater authoritarianism and tyranny. Mm-hmm. And the nations that are using technology in the same way as all other nations, they almost don't seem to be able to distinguish from technological process and its effect on humans. It's almost as if how technology affects humanity and the basic natural values of humanity is irrelevant. All that matters is that the technology moves forward. So this does seem to be you know, when we ask the question, why is technology progressing? Why does it always move forward with no mandate from the common man? It, you know, it could be said that it's just simply the result of nation states trying to keep up with other nation states. You know, do you think there's anything in that, Hadrian?
Yes, and the fact that the people give tacit consent, you mm-hmm. know, that's a big part of it too. And, you know, for a long time now, we've been what I would call people of the book as opposed to people of the law. And what I mean by that is that we take our cues from the written word or the spoken word as opposed to nature itself. This is a problem because we don't practice natural law anymore. We don't observe it. We don't bring ourselves in alignment with it. Right, instead. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you don't have to be a philosophy scholar to get the basics of natural law. Essentially, natural law comes down to respect for private property rights and law of reciprocity, and then truth telling, right? And if we take a look at a technology and what it does, it violates all of that, right? It violates private property rights. In fact, who controls it, right? A hammer, you know who owns that. That's personal property. But these huge systems, I mean, does anybody own it? Does it own itself? Does it own us? You know, I don't know. And then its ability to disseminate lies and falsehoods. You know, just look at the fact-checking bullshit that's been going on social media. It keeps everyone confused. They don't know what the truth is. And because they haven't been schooled in natural law, they don't know where or how to look for the truth.
Yeah, and, absolutely. Yeah, so we go.
Yeah, and it's also parasitic. So it violates the law of reciprocity, which is something, again, that we don't find in nature. So, you know, for people who are trying to overcome this on an individual level, and, you know, this is something I tell my clients who I work with, is you have to come back to first principles. You have to come back to natural law. Start governing yourself and your actions by natural law. When you engage with others, you know, hold them accountable according to natural law, and stop allowing yourself to be polluted with all of this information that's coming in through the digital systems, because it's there to corrupt.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I mentioned in my one part of my article that I read out earlier was that we have law instead of instinct. And what I should have said there is we have the legal system instead of instinct. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, as you've just alluded to there, we have written law rather than natural law. And in that sense, we can see the codified system of law as a technology.
Yes.
And I would say as a negative technology. And one of the things that you also alluded to there is that there is no accountability. You know, for example, with the smartphone, you can say, well, a smartphone is like a hammer because each person has one. But that's not quite true when you consider that the effects of a smartphone only truly reveal themselves when that smartphone is part of a wider network, when it is used societally, whereas a hammer doesn't need to be used societally for it to have an impact. It is used on an individual basis. So you can judge that one hammer in the hand of that one man or woman, whereas a smartphone, as a technology, it's not a standalone item. It's part of a network. And there is no accountability. You know, someone who wields a hammer to hit someone over the head and kill them or cause them severe damage, there is, in a natural society, there would be accountability for that. But someone who wields a technology such as social media across a network of smartphones, who's accountable there? I mean, certainly Mark Zuckerberg, it would only be the kind of public face of Facebook. And he is not responsible for the entirety of the culture of social media. Ergo, there is no accountability there for that technology. And that is one of the major problems. And that results in a lack of reciprocity, because you are feeling the negative effects of technology without there being any recompense for that negative effect. You know, you might feel the positives of it as well, but it needs to be accounted for on all levels, right?
Correct. And you know, with the example you just gave with the hammer, yeah, if somebody were to use a hammer to damage someone else's property or to harm them personally by injuring them or killing them, there are consequences to that, and there's a process for remedy. But if somebody damages somebody by using technology, for example, through social media and just propagating lies and falsehoods, and I mean, they can destroy someone's entire life. They can destroy their relationships. They can impersonate them. I mean, there's all manner of damage that can be done, and there's no remedy for that. There's no way to hold that person accountable.
No. And I think that's why we've ended up with concepts like the Mechanurge, because it does seem to be this self-perpetuating progression, that it doesn't seem to be at the behest of any one man or even a group of individuals. It seems to be this self-propagating system which is just sweeping across the planet with no accountability, no real statement of intent. It just is, you know, that there is no questioning the advancement of technology. It's just something that's a given that we're all supposed to just accept without question. And if any one of us who suggests that, you know, hey, maybe there is a negative side to this, we're just labeled as Luddites, or, you know, or maybe people might say, well, okay, yeah, you have a point, but, you know, what are you going to do about it? It's as natural as the changing of the seasons, you know, this progress of technology. And this is what's been instilled in our minds, is this idea that there is no way to go but forward with technology. So I think maybe that brings us to like our kind of final, although fairly sizable, talking point, really, which is, what can we do about this? I mean, I'd like to start this kind of final part off, Hadrian, with, you know, you wanted to talk about how technology is innate to humanity and how it cannot be removed from us because we're born from it.
Correct. You're asking me how we how we disentangle ourselves from this.
Well, yeah. And, you know, what are your, you know, if you could, you know, we've talked off the record about this idea that humanity seems to be ill-equipped for life in the natural realm. In some senses, you know, we can't survive without clothing, right? Even in the warmer parts of the world, we are the only species that needs to clothe itself. So just on that level, you know, there's, you know, Haven and I have both watched, there's an old presentation by a guy called Lloyd Pye, which is interesting to watch. And I'm not going to give my take on that one way or another. And I'm not going to ask Haven to either. But just on that basic level, the idea that we are the only species on this planet that needs to clothe ourselves to survive does seem to suggest that we are more innately tied to the idea of technology. You know, obviously we have beavers who, as we spoke about earlier, who build dams, they use technology, but no species uses or relies upon technology to the extent that we do. So can we even disentangle ourselves from it?
I don't think we can. What I think we can do is make individual choices as to how we are going to use technology and how much we're going to allow technology to be a part of our lives. One of the things that, again, the gentleman from the Praise of Folly video mentioned that I think is key here is he said that if we all started stopped consuming, this entire thing would end because the machine is dependent upon our consumption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is huge. Okay. So the less we consume of technology, the less power technology has over us. Again, this comes back to being a virtuous individual, and very few of us are capable of enough virtue to control our relationship with technology. The majority of people are slaves to it, and they're going to continue to be slaves to it. So yeah. I think we can only make these choices on an individual level. I don't see us making sweeping changes as a species because there are just too few of us who are going to be able and willing to make those choices to lower our consumption of technology.
Indeed. And not only that, but by choosing not to use technology to its fullest extent, we immediately place ourselves in a disadvantageous position.
Yes.
You know, so not only are we going against the grain, but we would be going up against the establishment with, we'd essentially be taking, you know, a knife to a gunfight, you know, to use a metaphor. So I do tend to agree with you there. I don't think that there's any kind of communal impetus for relinquishing technology. I think, yeah, it does have to come from, and when the individual chooses to use technology, use less technology, or not to adopt the latest technological tools, accepting the fact that we are going to be at a disadvantage, we may find that we are going to be earning less money than those who do use technology to the fullest of its extent. We may find that we are going to be ostracized by those because we haven't, you know, watched the latest or experienced the latest virtual reality experience that, you know, in 10, 20 years might be the way that humans entertain themselves by in a kind of almost total recall way where we experience these extended, I don't know, I'm just speculating here, but right. Yeah, the point is that we will be opting out of that, and for no real practical reason. It will be it would have to be for spiritual, philosophical reasons that we do that. But yeah, I agree. I can't really see any way that we can turn the course of society and its relationship with technology.
No, I mean, I don't want to sound like a black pill here, but, you know, folks like us, we kind of are the Neanderthal that's being edged out by the Cro-Magnon, who has the superior technology. You know, it's all a question of, you know, what do we do with the time we have? You know, we can't overcome these kinds of forces. It's foolish to try. We only have control over ourselves and the influence that we have, you know, over our relationships. So that's where we have to put our focus. And people also have to psychologically weather this. So, you know, what's important is getting enough authentic experience in your life, authentic relationships with authentic people, authentic activities, you know, staying psychologically healthy, or what I would call psycho-spiritually healthy, because I consider the psyche to be spiritual as well as psychological. You know, and just getting as much quality of life as you can. And, you know, this thing's going to go where it's going to go. You know, we as individuals can't steer it.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see it as from a pessimistic point of view. I don't see it as particularly black-pilling, because I think once you drop the, you know, and yes, it is an idea that's instilled in us from birth, this idea that as participants in a democratic society, we have the ability to change the course of the world. You know, we all grow up with these TV shows and, you know, whatever, books and literature which teach us that we can change the course of history. And in some senses we can, but not, I think, in the way that most people think we can. And I feel, you know, for a number of years now, I've known that the electoral system doesn't work, and it is not going to bear any fruits for those of us who are frankly sickened by it. But knowing that, and knowing that we actually need to place all of our efforts into taking control of our own lives and our own destinies, I've found quite empowering for myself. And so, you know, although we can accept the fact that we may not be able to turn back the progress of technology and all of its negative impacts on society, we do nevertheless, on an individual basis, have the option to choose to abstain from that. And we can also seek to find others who have a similar mindset, and we can spend more time with them, maybe eventually form communities with them. And I think that's what's going to happen. You know, we watch these films like, you know, The Running Man and Demolition Man, and it was spoken about of in the infamous World Economic Forum article about, you know, you will own nothing and you'll be happy. The author of that article talks about people who live in the kind of, you know, I forget what she calls them, but the outer lands, the people who haven't adopted this way of life, and how she feels sorry for them. So there is this thread of idea that there will be people who live outside of this technological system, this technosphere, as Dave Martell calls it. And I don't think there's anything to fear from that. I mean, personally, that's something that I'm going to be embracing for the rest of my life, is to embed myself further into that natural realm, and further away from the technosphere, and looking for others who have a similar mindset. And yeah, maybe one day that means that, you know, there'll be, you know, roaming bands of highly technologically advanced, opportunists who want to come and take what little we more natural folk have. And if that's the case, then so be it. But at least we will have lived our lives with our spirit intact.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I hope that that happens. And I hope that, you know, those who are in power choose to let us live in peace. You know, I don't know that that's going to happen. But yeah, I mean, we can't try to control for the future. I think it is critically important, like you said, for people to seek out authentic relationships. And I mentioned that in my previous comment, too. I mean, that's what we need, to have as much authentic life experience as we can create for ourselves.
And it's still incredibly fulfilling. You know, I've got, you know, a number of challenges ahead of me learning to, you know, with learning how to homestead, learning more traditional skills, which will enable me to be more self-sufficient and for my family to be. My wife is learning more about herbal remedies, and you know, we're learning how to grow a wide variety of vegetables and fruits and herbs, and you know, we're looking after chickens, and I'm learning new DIY skills. So this is all challenging to me, and anyone who's going down this path of homesteading is having to learn new skills. But there is something immensely fulfilling about that, you know. So although we might not get to enjoy, you know, the wonders of AI, virtual reality, entertainment, we're going to be living a life which is more spiritually fulfilling. So it's something I embrace wholeheartedly. But this is an enormous subject, and I think that even with our best efforts, Haven and I have only kind of scratched the surface. You know, in addition to my conversation with Dave Martell on the Mechanurge, it really is only scratching the surface. But was there any kind of, you know, points that you wanted to get in here, Haven, before we kind of close out this episode?
No, I think we hit all the major points. Again, I would just encourage people to stay psychologically and spiritually healthy. You know, be mindful of what you use and how you use it. And be accountable to yourself and try to be as virtuous as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, if Haven will allow me, I'll mention that she is going to be moving into coaching. And already has, you know, quite a bit of experience in that realm. So, you know, those of you out there who are looking for some kind of strong foundation to work from, or who are trying to find that kind of basis to get their life back on track psychologically, spiritually, Haven would be a good person to speak to. And she runs a website called, what's the address, Haven? Freefolk.org?
Correct. Yeah,
freefolk.org.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate that very much.
No, you're welcome. And it's also something that I'm probably going to be looking into doing myself as well. I've had a couple of young men who've come to me asking for assistance, trying to kind of, you know, find their course in life. Although initially I didn't feel like it was something that I could offer much on, it turns out that actually, you know, I do have something to offer there. So this is something.
Yeah, you've got a lot of wisdom to share. I'm glad you're going to be doing this as well. Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much, Haven. And it's partly with Haven's encouragement as well, because there are a lot of people out there who are lost in this day and age, and especially with the burdens and the threats posed by this ever encroaching technology, people who are finding it difficult to find romantic partners because technology has taken over the dating game and things.
Oh, that's so, another topic we should cover seriously, we could do an hour or two just on that alone. Yeah,
we should do definitely, yeah. Because you're right, I think that's, not only is that a big topic, it's an important one, because of the young people I talk to, that is actually their main bugbear, their main kind of focus of frustration is the inability to find a life partner, a romantic partner, a husband or a wife.
Same here. They ask me, where do we meet people? It's a big topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anyway, yeah, thank you, Haven. It's always great to speak to you, and you will always offer wonderful insights. So, yeah, thank you for speaking with me.
Always a pleasure, Dan. Thank you so much for having me back. Let's talk again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And to everyone else, thank you very much for listening to the Fergan podcast. And please like and share. And that's fyrgen.com, fergan.com, for more information. And you can listen to all the past episodes. Patrons get the podcast a week early, and then it's freely available to all, and there's merchandise for those of you who want another way to support the podcast. So thank you all for listening and for sharing, and I hope that you're getting something out of all of this, and I'll speak to you in the next episode. Of course, I cannot leave you without the answer to last podcast riddle. That was podcast number 25, and it was quite a quite an obscene riddle. It was, I'm a strange creature, for I satisfy women. A service to the neighbours, no one suffers at my hands except my slayer. I grow very tall, erect in bed, I'm hairy underneath. From time to time, a beautiful girl dares to hold me, grips my russet skin. you know, it's pretty kind of, as I say, it's pretty obscene. But actually, you know, and I think this is quite a famous riddle. And I think a lot of people have heard this before in other contexts. But the origin of it is, of course, that it is an Anglo-Saxon riddle. And the answer to this one is, well, officially speaking, is onion, which does make sense. And it probably just demonstrates the old Anglo-Saxon sense of humour, really, that obviously, you know, they're leading you towards this quite what seems like quite an obvious, obscene answer to that riddle when actually you've been fooled, you've been had, and it's just an onion. And it makes sense. I'm a strange creature. Satisfy women. You know what I mean? Who doesn't like a good onion? I grow tall. I'm hairy underneath. A beautiful girl dares to hold me, russet skin, puts me in the pantry, and her eye moistens. So yeah, onions, obviously chopping onions makes you cry. So yeah, that was quite an amusing one. So for this episode's riddle, number 26, it's a bit longer, and it goes as follows. An enemy ended my life, deprived me of my physical strength. Then he dipped me in water and drew me out again and put me in the sun where I soon shed all my hair. After that, the knife's sharp edge bit into me and all my blemishes were scraped away. Fingers folded me and the bird's feather often moved over my brown surface. Sprinkling meaningful marks, it swallowed more wood dye, part of the stream, and again travelled over me, leaving black tracks. Then a man bound me. He stretched skin over me and adorned me with gold. Thus I am enriched by the wondrous work of smiths, wound about with shining metal. Now my clasp and my red dye and these glorious adornments bring fame far and wide to the protector of man, and not to the pains of hell. If only the sons of men would make use of me, they would be the safer and the more victorious. Their hearts would be bolder, their minds more at ease, their thoughts wiser, and they would have more friends, companions, and kinsmen. Courageous, honourable, trusty, kind, who would gladly increase their honour and prosperity, and heap benefits upon them, ever holding them most dear. Ask what I am called, of such use to men. My name is famous, of service to men, and sacred in itself. I have a suspicion that this one may not be quite so pertinent to a heathen podcast. So yeah, as always, I'll resist offering the answer until the next episode. But give that one some thought, and you know, in the comments under the Odyssey video, or if you're a patron, in the comments under the post where this podcast will be posted, let me know what you think of that one. But yeah, I have my suspicions, and I think it might, for the first time, be one which is definitely not quite so suited to a heathen podcast, but we'll see. Anyway, be well, and I'll speak to you in the next episode of the podcast.